Thanks for downloading this podcast, which is for personal use only. All contents are copyright Radio Show Limited and must not be reproduced, rebroadcast, or used in any form without permission. For contact details, go to www.radiolemon.com. Around the world, around the clock, endurance racing, direct to you, wherever you are, radiolemon.com.
It's John Hindhoff and Richard Creel talking you through the Liquid Moly 12 Hours of Bathurst Field, exclusively live here on Radio Le Mans, of course, at the weekend, every session here. And we'll join up in sound and vision with our TV colleagues as well. We'll provide the audio. They'll have some pictures. You'll be able to see it streaming on the series website and at RadioLeMans.com. Time for us to have a look at the runners and riders with Creelsey here alongside me. I mean, how long have we got this? A little bit down. Let's start with some of the people who aren't here, because I want to sort of get that out of the way and straight away, Creelsey. The entry was capped at 55 starters. There were at least 55 people who put their money down.
Yep.
Spoke to James O'Brien, Yeehaw Events, the guy behind this, earlier on in the week, and he thought he was going to have to enforce the cut-off. It's not quite going to be that. We've got slightly fewer cars, very slightly fewer cars than last year. And one or two that I'm a bit disappointed that haven't turned up, of course. One or two of the guys that are big names that would have been at the front of the field that should have been here, and for various reasons, mainly financial, trying to put things together, at the last minute they haven't managed to turn up.
Yeah, and you're talking about Vita for One.
Yes,
Michael Bartels.
Absolutely.
They entered in late December, a day before the entries closed, and it was always a bit of a hope and cross your fingers situation that they get drivers for it. Unfortunately, Michael Bartels couldn't do it. We need to. There's been a lot of chat about social media about this, and I think, because we talked about the 55 car cap, and we've since gone back from that people are a little bit, I think, frustrated that we're not there, and I am too. And this place has got a heritage of having 55 cars and cars gridding up all the way around the corner onto the bottom end of Conrod Straight. There were 55 cars committed to this race, so we need to clear that up. There were at one stage. Unfortunately, everyone's still a bit fragile, I think, in the world economy, and some people just couldn't get the budget together to do it. As such, we've dropped back, but no one missed out. You know, we didn't have a reserve list. There were 55 entries. It was capped at 55. That's where it was. So no one missed out. No one went home disappointed. That's just the way it played out. It's unfortunate. Look, a lot of BMW fans here really disappointed that Vita for One aren't coming. But I spoke to Michael Bartels when he announced his entry, and he raced here in 2003 in the Bathurst 24 Hour. That was a short-lived two-year thing, and ran a Porsche with the Outson brothers and finished fourth, won their class. And he said, ever since then, I've wanted to come back. And if for some reason we can't make it in 2014, which has eventuated, we will be there in 2015. We'll have a year to plan for it.
That's just smart.
Yeah, exactly. So expect the Vita for One BMWs to come, which will be fantastic.
The basis of this race, the whole DNA of this race, is on production-based touring cars and sports cars.
Yep.
Again, and we need to hit this head on right at the start of this preview, there has been a bit of chatter about the fact that it's moving away from its roots. And yet, I'm looking at two sheets of entries, of which getting on for a third, almost to a half, are still production-based cars with what you and I would see immediately as local, Australian entries. Yes, there is a bigger international contingent at the head of the field. Is it fair to say that the traditional entries wouldn't have been able to sustain this race? You mentioned the 24-hour race, and it's short-lived.
I don't think they could have. Look, the
race. I'm not criticising
that. No, I know. 2007, this race came back after a hiatus. It closed down at the end of 2004 at Bathurst. They had 1 year in Sydney at 1994, I should say. 95, they had 1 year at Eastern Creek and did 1,000 laps of Eastern Creek in 12 hours. It wasn't quite that many, but they got dizzy. And then it disappeared. So it came back in 2007 with a production car race. So series production. Look up the Australian Manufacturers
Group
Championship.
Group A's, Group N's, that kind of thing.
Yeah, correct. So Mitsubishi Lancer Evos, a BMW 335, which is still racing today.
Yep.
Most successful car in the history of the 12-hour, by the way. And it was great. And it grew. And by 2010, we had 55 cars on the grid and a very competitive race. However, where do you go from that? Where do you grow that internationally, especially? And this race always had the potential to be the international Bathurst, more so than October. Mm-hmm. That's the big domestic event. It's the Bathurst 1000. Mm-hmm. It always will be. We know that. It's not going to change. But how did you change it? And the answer to that was GT3.
Yes.
Because it's a global formula. It's raced everywhere. There are cars throughout Asia. There are cars in Australia, all across Europe and the United States now as well, which is great. So that was the move. It did have some backlash. But I look at it. It's like they're still production-based cars. They're just faster production-based cars than the one we had.
Surely GT3 is the ultimate iteration of a production-based car. Yeah. The other thing that we don't have this year, it's not a round of the Australian GT Championship. We had that bizarre situation last year where after the first hour, some of them got points and then dropped out. That's not affecting the grid this year. So the cars that will start are all 12-hour competitors.
Correct, and that hurt my head to explain as much as I think it hurt Deck to explain the chase for the NASCAR Cup in 2014. So that's gone as well. It was an experiment. It was worth trying, but the interest just wasn't there. Aussie GT guys would rather just focus on doing the 12-hour.
What I would say about the entry list this year is, once again, and we saw this with Peugeot last year with the RCZ being launched as a race car, as it was being, in fact, slightly before it was being launched into the showrooms here in Australia. We've got Abarth with the Abarth 500, based on the Fiat 500, of course. The Fiat Chrysler group down here taking a leaf out of Peugeot's book and saying, this car's coming to Australia. This is the perfect way to unleash it on an unsuspecting public. And we've got also, quite interestingly, this Focus GTC, because given what we've talked about in the past about the Aussie V8, this could be the future of Ford racing in Australia. This is a car that's been co-developed with the South Africans. Yep. It looks like a Focus, kind of.
Yep.
And both of those manufacturers committing three cars to the group Class F and Class I, the Invitational and the up to 3 litres. Now, there's going to be a bit of a jiggery pokery about how the classes are, but ultimately they are two very much manufacturer backed sets of entries there.
Yeah, correct. And the Mark Focuses are a fantastic story, and the GTC series that's being formed in South Africa, the car was designed and built by Paul Sepranich, who's based on the Gold Coast, expat South African, heavily involved in V8 supercars over the years as an engineer and a designer, and Ryan McLeod, who's raced his cars internationally at some of the Creventic events. Mm-hmm. He raced at the Catalunya 24 Hour, I think, as well, in VXR Astras, Vauxhall Opel Astras. But decided everything he learnt from that, he wanted to turn into an affordable, custom-built, turnkey endurance racer.
Yeah.
So he designed his own. And it turned out that Paul Sepranich had designed this global touring car, and they thought, well, that's a good base, we'll do that. So they put them together, and I've had a lot of conversations with Ryan about these cars, and they're a very good thing. They reckon they'll be about somewhere between Class B and C, so bottom end of GT3 and the GT4 cars, in theory.
Running what engine?
They run a crate motor, a Ford...
V8?
V8 crate motor.
Right. Yep. So it makes the right noise, drives the butt wheels.
560 horsepower, rear wheel drive, 6-speed sequential gearbox, proper race cars too, lock diff, double wishbone, fully adjustable suspension. That proper racing cars, Motec dash, all the data, everything they need. But affordable and engineered to pound around this place for 12 hours without raising a sweat and without being overstressed, and then go and do Spa, Nürburgring, all of the major races in Europe and Dubai, and then they're going to come back here with a year's development.
Really interesting test for them here. They're in the Invitational class because they don't quite fit in anything else. And well done to James and Yeehaw for letting them in. Very different animals, the Abarth 500s, multicoloured. We won't miss them up on the mountain, and neither will anyone else. The trucks are looking fantastic. It does look like a little Skelextra car. It is fantastic. Slammed, big wheels, leery paint job. And when they fire up this little four-cylinder engine, it is fantastic. It sounds really good.
Yeah. They're ripper little racing cars, aren't they? And everyone's going, oh, they're going to be so slow. And they're not going to be fast compared to a GT car.
No.
But I don't think they're going to be as slow as people think. And they've got some very, very handy people steering that ship. Luke Ellery's a great young gun, an open wheel racer from Formula Ford. Luke Yulden races V8 supercars as a co-driver. Paul Stokel's a triple Australian drivers champion in wings and slicks racing and one of the best driver coaches going around. Their other drivers are motoring journalists. Yeah. So that's how they're leveraging their involvement.
How come we aren't involved in that?
Don't know, John.
We missed out on you, didn't we?
You've been hatching a plan to get yourself on the grid here next year.
Oh, I'm going to drive this race. There's no doubt about it.
Which is happening. But that's how they're leveraging their involvement. So that's great. And that brings a huge amount of awareness to the event. They're going to be good fun. They're going to have a great race amongst themselves. And they're going to be the deciding factor for a lapped car you've got 25 minutes to go, you've got three or four GT3 cars and they pop up on one of the Fiats coming across the top, think fast, think quickly.
Class D is the 3 litre and above invitational class, and this is where we're seeing the real roots of this event. Subaru, BMW, even a couple of Seat Leon Supercoupes, which seem to pop up everywhere at the moment because they are such a good endurance car, not necessarily running in their own championships anymore. And we've got some good names in here, haven't we? And names that some of our international listeners will know as well. We've got the Mortimer Motorsports guys with Michael Lyons, and Andre and Warwick Mortimer, Frank Lyons in a venerable E92. We've got that 335i in there as well, the GWS personnel car with Peter O'Donnell on that. As well, these cars, as I say, are absolutely the roots. We're not going to see a winner out of here, but these cars are, generally speaking, pretty reliable. They run round at their own pace, and that Class D battle is a tough one to call, to be honest. And there's a lot of variety there.
Yeah, it is. It's really, really open, wide variety. That the GWS car, the 335, that's the car we talked about before. It won here twice, 07 and 2010 outright. In 2010, remarkably beat a bunch of four-wheel drive turbo Evo Lancers in pouring rain. And it's a rear-wheel drive BMW, so that was a remarkable achievement. But since then, in the lower classes, in its own class, in Class D, it's finished second twice and won last year, despite barely completing a lap in practice, if you remember.
Yes,
they had electrical dramas up the wazoo. A massive drama. And they managed to get it to the flag and won their class, and that was the happiest podium you've ever seen. So that car has never DNF'd a 12-hour race, and it has completed all seven of them that started.
You know that, don't you?
I hope.
In GT4, the Class C runners... just the three entries, but three quality entries, particularly welcoming back the Motion Sport Lotus Exige, which were actually very unlucky not to win here last year. Got picked up by one of the Benzes when they were leading the Peugeot team.
An hour to go, wasn't it, in the race?
And those guys, that was a story for them because they basically rebuilt that car in the early part of the week.
Yeah, correct.
It was put together here. I remember them going, have we got another drive shot? No, we haven't. Okay, well, we'll have to fix this drive shot. I mean, it was just a great story. And within literally 60 minutes of winning their class.
Yeah, massive disappointment for them. But they put on a really good show. They've got some local backing coming on board for that car this year. And 2012 British Touring Car Champion Gordon Shedden is
added
jumping
to the driver roster.
Has had a surprising amount of interest down here.
Really?
There's a fandom for the BTCC down here because... In the 90s, when Frank Beeler and Alan Menu and those guys were winning it, it was on TV here and it was very, very popular. So people do follow it, and Sheds has got a fairly large following. So in relative terms,
Tony Alford has brought another Lotus, the Exige Cup R, and there's a Ginetta G50 in there. Sam Chester with the Spray Booth Services Australia car as well. That's going to be a hell of a little battle.
Yeah.
Within that, they are not slow cars either. They are good round here.
They are. The Lotus is arguably the favourite though. I think, based on their performance from last year, they're looking really good.
The car's nicely balanced as well for round here. That leaves us to rattle through the GT3 cars, which are split into two classes, Class B and Class A. They are effectively the same specification of cars.
Yep. Yes, they are. Class B is just the previous generation. So 2012, 2011 spec cars. The Class A is for the outright current iteration cars that you'll see in Blancpain series, which should suggest that this race runs basically to an adaption of the Blancpain series regs, so balance of performance and the stuff that works in Europe, it works here, so we've adapted to that. Class B, I've got some late-breaking news and a contender for you in that. There's been a change of class for the Roger Largo, David Russell, Peter Cox, Lamborghini. They have moved to Class B because Roger has two Lamborghini Gallardo LP640s. One of them in current 2013 spec. One of them is a 2009 spec car with some upgrades. Mm. Same car that raced and crashed here in the first hour.
Yeah.
My understanding is, and I'm yet to confirm it with Roger, but my understanding is that the older spec car has better balance of performance than the new spec car. So Roger's gone, I'll run that in Class B. I have a crack at winning my class, but it might also pop up in the outright contention as well.
Well, I was going to say, you've only got to look at some of the drivers that dominated Class B, the GTs with older model, a 997 GT3 Cup Porsches. And you've only got to look at some of the drivers in there. Patrick Long, works driver, with David Calvert-Jones and Alex Davidson in
that's
the McIlrath.
Now that unbelievable team.
That's got to be a contender for the outright. It's got to be.
The only thing will let them down is that it's a Porsche Cup car racing GT3 car. So that's going to be
the ultimate
pace. They'll struggle if they get on the lead lap with an hour to go. Absolutely.
But haven't we also seen those Cup cars getting better mileage?
Yeah,
and therefore doing fewer pit stops?
Correct.
And if it's as hot as we think it's going to be on Sunday, that may play into their hands. If they do fewer pit stops, obviously driver fatigue is going to be a part of it. But if they can stay out there and just keep reeling off the laps.
Yep, 100%. What a driver lineup. Patrick Long, Alex Davison, former works factory driver, and he's raced V8 supercars for the last 3 or 4 years and is one of the better guys in the business, and there'll be a brother rivalry there too, because we'll get to Class A, his brother Will running one of the Erebus Mercedes.
We've also got in there, you mentioned Rob Hough, the World Touring Car champion. He has brought over Ollie Gavin, Richard Means and Kevin Gleeson. Now Kevin Gleeson's name probably won't be that familiar to some of our listeners, but Rob and Kevin teamed up at Thunder Hill at the end of last year and won the 25-hour race there in an Audi TT RS. They're in a 2011 model year R8 LMS, the Oakley Motorsports car,
same
the
car
Racing.
Same car from last year.
And again, I think you've got to look at that car again as certainly a potential class winner, but being there or thereabouts within the overall.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Ollie Gavin is a massive get for this race. Huffy was so keen to come back after last year, thoroughly enjoyed it. We were talking to him yesterday, we took him through the museum, but Ollie Gavin is a huge get. He is one of the best in the business, as you well know, and listeners of this show will well know, but he's huge for Australian fans that can finally get to see him, and he's been really, really keen to come to Mount Panorama for a long time. A
couple of other names I'm going to pull out. Eric Banner, who is another racing driving actor. He is mad for it. If you have not seen his DVD about his cars.
Love the Beast.
Love the Beast.
It's a ripper film. We had the premiere for that here at the 12 Hour in 2008, I think it was.
He's in the Gallardo, the LP520. It's a 2008 car, so it's got a bit of history itself with Simon Middleton and Peter Hill, the racing incident car, the 99 car. I mean, that's big news for the race. And it's and Eric, you know, let's get this right out there. He's no mean peddler.
No, he can drive. He can absolutely drive. This is his golf game. He loves it. It's a bit like Patrick Dempsey, I guess, but to a lesser extent, though. But he's a passionate, keen motorsport fan. And if you follow him on Twitter, he does tweet about it a lot. Broke Twitter, he and Mark Webber, late last year when Mark Webber's two words, no 2015, in answer to someone's question, are you and Eric Banner going to run the Bathurst 12 Hour, just destroyed my Twitter account. It was very, very enjoyable. Great PR for the event. It made every major newspaper in Australia. But that's a good combination. There's another car in that class as well, Hindy, that I like, which is, I think, going to fly right under the radar. It's a Porsche for Rentcorp Motorsport. Devarshan Padiachi, who's run Carrera Cup. Richard Musket, who won the GT3 Cup Challenge here last year. Really great young kid. Has just been signed by Erebus to drive in Australian GT this year as part of their academy program. And Barton Moore, who's an ex-open wheel racer. Good, strong combination. No big names, but they'll be good.
A couple of other names we've got to pull out, because when Rickshaw turns up, you've got to talk about Rickshaw. Not in the Mazda this time. He's got a GT3 Cup car. Great to see Rick back, a real supporter of this event. Tony Richards is in that class as well, in one of the motorsport services, Porsche. And again, you know, these are names that people, particularly in this part of the world, recognise immediately.
They do. Motorsport services are a fantastic team, and they have been one of the biggest supporters of this race, and once again have brought four cars, two of their Sayat and two of the Porsches. Great to see them back.
And I'll just have a quick word for Earl Bamber, who once again is racing Grove Motorsport in the GT3. He and I did a couple of Super League Formula commentaries together, and I'm glad to see Earl's got some decent drives under. He was at Daytona a couple of weeks ago. Great kid, very quick in single seaters. Didn't get the fair crack of the whip. I'm glad to see him making a career in sports cars.
Won the Porsche scholarship last year to get a full-time Super Cup drive this year. His co-driver, Stephen Grove, who owns the car, was in the top three in the sort of non-professional class in Carrera Cup in Australia, which is very, very competitive. And Ben Barker, who raced Super Cup all last season, Carrera Cup GB the year before, and Carrera Cup Australia the year before that. The year before that, he won the Australian F3 Championship. So very good combination. They're a good group. good car too.
Going on to Class A, 16 cars in that 15 now, as you've just mentioned. I mean, where do you look? Let's start with the... We have to start with the defending champions, Erebus Motorsport, Bernschneider, Maro Engel, Nico Bastian, in the Mercedes-Benz. It's a 2012 car with a few updates on it. It looks mean, moody and magnificent in the pits. Hasn't fired up, hasn't turned a wheel yet, and already it looks like a race winner.
They all got new liveries this year, purple and green. They've gone for it on works the two well. Cars. The Aussie car this year, a few changes in the driver lineup. Last year we saw Tim Slade, Lee Holdsworth and Peter Hackett on board the Aussie car. This year, Will Davison slides in. He's signed for Erebus in the V8 Supercar Championship, so it's only natural that he runs. Next door to him is a young man by the name of Jack LeBrock. Mm-hmm. French-sounding name, but not, though. Australian Formula Ford champion of 2 years ago. Last year, did three rounds of Australian GT and absolutely dismantled the field.
Really?
Completely tore them apart and won six races from six starts. And perhaps the most inspired co-driver choice of the race, Greg Crick, who is a legend of Australian motorsport, Tasmanian car dealer. He has raced for 35 years, if not more. He's won the Targa Tasmania. He's got more than 10 starts at the Bathurst 1000 in the V8 Supercars and Australian Touring Car Championship. Raced Australian GT up to 2 years ago in a GT3 Dodge Viper. Now races a 1973 Chrysler Charger E55.
Envious at all.
For those overseas, Google it. It's got a 360 cubic inch Mopar V8. So if anyone's doubting Crick's ability to handle something with a lot of horsepower, don't. He is a superb, the non-professional, non-seater driver in the car. He's a brilliant choice.
He'll be wondering why the car's not moving around. He'll think he's not going quick enough. That's scary. That is very scary. Sticking with Mercedes-Benz, HTP Motorsport are back. Harald Primat, Thomas Jäger, Maximilian Buch. They know how to win long races. Of course, won at Spa. Max champion, Thomas Jäger, we know about him. Harald Primat, we know. These guys are... That is a rock-solid driver lineup in a very, very reliable car.
And that's
a 13 car, by the way.
Yeah, I was talking to Renaud Dufour, the technical director who's running that program this weekend. Spoke to him the other day. That's a new chassis and a brand new engine as well for that car for this round. So they're excited. They're happy to be here. And that's the first time we've seen anyone else other than Erebus run an SLS AMG in Australia. So a lot of interest in them. Car looks good. It's white compared to the silver, grey, green and purple cars of the Erebus. So we won't miss it. They've got to be in the top three or four favourites as well.
Sadly, the Corvette not here. The Trofeo Motorsport with Ivan Capelli listed among that, along with Jim Manolius. That car hasn't arrived, which I'm a bit disappointed at. I was looking forward to seeing that and looking forward to the variety. We've got a raft of Audis, the R8 LMS Ultras of 2012 and 2013. Racing.
Phoenix Racing.
You've got to straight away look at them.
Back in a big way. Lawrence Van Thor is incredible. What a
look at his driver lineup he's got with him.
It's amazing, isn't it? Rail Frey's an interesting addition to that. First female to take on the outright class in the Bathurst 12 Hour, which is fantastic. Of course, for those in Australia who don't know her, she'd raced in German touring cars, DTM, for some time and been part of their sports car program.
Very good sports car driver.
Yeah.
Endurance driver.
And
René Rast.
Yeah, I mean, three-time Super Cup champion. He's one of the best Porsche racers around, one of the best GT racers. Wasn't he? He's in the top three in the Autosport top 10 GT drivers of last year as well.
Spoke to him at Daytona doing some stuff from Audi. He's effectively an Audi Works driver now. He's certainly on the customer racing side of things. He is loving the transition to the R8. He likes the balance of the car.
Yep.
He's super quick.
Yep.
And this is a circuit that's made for him.
Yeah.
He will love this.
He's going to go crazy when he gets out there. That's a great team. So the two Erebus cars, the HTP car and the Phoenix Racing car, have to be considered outright chances for this race. But the nature of endurance racing at this place, Honda, as you well know, and indeed anywhere around the world, is that favourites often don't get to the line first, do they? Because this can upset you quite badly over the course of the race. A couple of driver signings. Yesterday it was announced that Shane van Gisbergen will join the VIP Pet Foods team. McLaren's racing return to Mount Panorama with the 12C GT3 car. First time we've seen that race in Australia will be this weekend.
Oh, really?
And
hasn't been here before.
Has not been
Andrew Cicotti's on that squad, and his team, of course,
CRS,
basically developed that racing car, so he knows the car.
That's a smart signing. And Tony and Clark Quinn. Tony found some form last year in GT in his Aston Martin and was brilliant. And Clark Quinn's just wrapped up his second Australian GT Championship in a row. Good combination. They were on the podium last year, remember, in the Porsche.
Yes.
If the McLaren lasts, and I think that's probably the biggest question mark, they could do it again.
I do think I mean, you could talk about every single one of the cars in that class. I sort of missed out United Autosports there, not deliberately. Talking with the team yesterday, Marcus Winkelhock has been brought in to drive with Eric Lux and Mark Patterson, well known to the team. There is a team who are very well organised, formerly ran McLaren's, made the jump over to Audi, have run the Audi here before. That is a 12 version of the car. The guys up there are quietly confident.
Winky's a good signing,
I think he is.
Isn't he? I think that's a good
car
get.
Car looks great.
And do you remember, they were in contention for a top six result with an hour to go. Remember when the rain and Armageddon came to the mountain at the end of the race last year? And Hartley was driving, wasn't he? And had the crash at the top of the mountain, which took them out of contention. So, yeah, look, this is the thing. And qualifying this year reverts to fastest time set by any driver sets the grid. In the past, we've had an aggregate format, which is all a bit complicated, so we got rid of that. It's not like it's simple. So there, of every car in Class A has a driver that could realistically be on pole position, and I'll stand by that.
We'll talk a little bit more about the rest of that Class A, the GD3 outright at the moment, but you've hit on a very important point there for our listeners, is that in the past there have been target times, breakout times and things like that. All gone.
All of it.
So qualifying, live here on RadioLeMond.com, exclusively live here on RadioLeMond.com, all about the fastest man across the mountain.
Which is what this place is perfect for.
I agree.
Bathurst is famous for a one lap on a Saturday afternoon and the top 10 shootout in the V8 Supercars race.
Yep. So Hardy's heroes, mate.
Exactly right. So, and that's what we've gone back to now. So we will see the fastest racing cars in Australia, current spec GT3 cars, about F3 pace, going with great drivers, world's best drivers, going head-to-head against this track to see how fast they'll go on a resurfaced circuit.
Well, and there is the rub, literally, but the grip, if you like, because where we sit now, we've got a great view of the start line. It looks darker. It's very much smoother, having driven around in the Nissan 370Z. We've got new catch fencing FIA style. We've got slightly different colourways around the mountain in terms of some of the concrete blocks have gone from white to black, and that slightly just changes how you view things, particularly at Griffin Bend.
Yep.
Now, that was really interesting when I drove up there on Monday. How much quicker? How much quicker do we think? Are we looking at a two-minute lap, or is that just a little bit too far away?
I think 2 minutes is too far away. However, last year the Phillip Island Grand Prix circuit was resurfaced.
Right.
It copped a similar surface to what has been put down over the summer here at Mount Panorama. GT3 cars went 4 seconds a lap faster.
Really?
GT3 cars have done 2 minute 4.9 here, unrestricted. So I don't think they'll do it. I think pole will be in the 202s. That's still a lap record by a monstrous margin. So
what does V8 do around here?
Well, last year they were in the eights. I was struggling to get in the eights because it was very, very hot. But, I mean, Greg Murphy's lap of the gods is a 2:06.8159, which is the fastest recorded V8 lap. And Craig Lowndes then went a little bit faster than that.
And isn't it interesting? We talked about this last year, about the way that the lap times come, because the V8s are 20, 30 clicks quicker down Conrad and into the chase than the GT cars. Although the GT cars basically turn in flat chat into the right-hander. It's much smoother there on braking. The GT cars have the advantage of downforce, but they will not be chattering as much as we saw last year. But over the top of the mountain, the GT3 cars are bonkers quick.
From the cutting to the elbow, so all the fast bit at the top, the first year GT cars came here, I spoke to Craig Lowndes and said, Craig, how much faster than the V8s are? And he's a bit quiet about it because he didn't really want to say, but so we're about 2.5 seconds.
Nowhere!
2.5 across the top. They lose a bit going up because they don't have the horsepower, and especially coming down because they've got more aero, more drag, slower in a straight line.
I don't accelerate and get to VMAX as quickly,
correct? But across the top, at least 2.5 seconds. And now, with 3 years of development, current spec cars, all the downforce, the aero they've got, they'll be faster. They'll be, 3 seconds faster across the top, point to point, so about 3Ks of racetrack.
It's a new surface, but it's a surface that looks to me to be weathered. It looks to me it's been driven on clearly as it's a public road. There's no hint of that greasiness that you sometimes see on the top of the tarmac.
We've both driven it, and in our road cars at the posted 60 kilometre an hour limit have gone, man, this thing's got some grip.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
And it's so much smoother as well, Crazy. And I think what we might see is people struggling for a balance on the car earlier on in the week, because they will not be used to the smooth. I think you could be a little bit more aggressive on your suspension settings here.
Yeah, I think so. You might run them a little bit lower to the ground because the bumps won't be so hard, which means you get more aero, which means you get more downforce, which means you get more grip, which means you're faster across the top of the mountain through all the bits that count, and in braking as well. Braking will be the big difference because there were a lot of bumps in the braking zones, especially into the chase as well, where the V8 guys had dramas last year. The bumps have gone in the braking zone, so they'll be able to brake later, and that's worth a half a second lap, I'm not sure.
I'm a rookie here, having only been here 1 year, but I do note that some of the extreme camber changes have not disappeared, but they have
been refined.
Yes. And I just wonder what that, because again, if you come down through, when you come down through the chase and in through the chicane, there's a big camber change there that you had to be so careful about getting the power on for the last right hander there as you come down past the hotel on the right hand side. And that is definitely less severe. I'm not saying it's gone.
No, I agree with
you. And going up through the cutting, also the camber changes, as you have to go from left to right there, you still turn in at the grate at the top of the hill, that's not going to change.
Yep.
But it just seems a little less severe to me.
Yeah, I agree. The character, we should emphasise, the character hasn't gone.
Oh, not at all.
This place is still unbelievably terrifyingly good. But yeah, just a little bit of camber. And I think as well, down Conrod Straight, there used to be a big crown on the road.
Yes.
And the cars would tramline, so they'd try and fight left and right as they decided which side of the road they'd sit on. It seems to me that that's been levelled out a little bit as well. So I think that will be, that's not going to affect lap time. That's a driver comfort thing. But it'll make it a little bit easier. But the big bumps on the entry to the chase, that's going to be impressive because that's gone.
Yes.
And these cars are absolutely flat knackered through there and they brake so late up the hill into the chase.
Scary. Yeah, let's talk about some more of the cars at the front of the field.
Talk about Nissan.
Well, Nissan are back in a works capacity for the first time in forever. I mean, we've all got happy memories of a certain age of Godzilla, the Nissan Skylines, four-wheel drive, fire-breathing monsters. You're not allowed the four-wheel drive now, so the GT3 GTR is rear-wheel drive only. This car I saw being finished in Nismo's Yokohama HQ last year when we were over there for the WEC, got a look round there, and the car was, it's a brand new build of the car. It's been built for this event. It is fully Nismo'd up, and I've got to say, that car looks right, and cars that look right tend to go right.
They do. Now, if I told you that Alex Buncombe would be a well-known name amongst Australian motorsport circles 12 months ago, you might have questioned my sanity a little bit. But when it was announced that Nissan were coming here with that car and their global athlete program that they've got, which is brilliant, one of the local motorsport websites posted a video of Alex in the GTR at Donington.
Yep.
And I think it was British GT race where he might have started last and might have ended up first within about a lap. And that's got millions of hits from Australia. Very, very impressive. If people learn what he was about. And the other
thing, he's a rookie here, though.
Yeah,
he has not. He was walking the mountain yesterday with Wolfgang Reep, who's one of the Nissan GT Academy drivers, Katsumasa Kiro as well. But they were getting very sage advice from Rick Kelly.
Yeah, and that's it's an interesting combo, isn't it? That Rick Kelly's had 2 days in that car at Sepang a few weeks ago, loved it. So he's a rookie to the car, knows this place backwards. Winner here, he's done everything he needs to do, V8 champion. The three drivers are good with the car, but never been here before. Yeah. Can they win? Oh, I don't know. This has been
Nissan win at Bathurst would be a phenomenal headline.
Especially if they did it before their V8 supercar team did it as well.
I was going to say that because that translates even gives the V8 supercar team a big shot in the arm, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does. And this is very, very. There's some involvement from the V8 program as well. We should mention that they've sent some crew up to help out. Of course, Rick Kelly as well, and a lot of media and public relations support from the factory. So this is a big operation. Can they win? Oh, three inexperienced drivers at Mount Panorama in a car that's never been here as well. I think it will be challenging. I think if they are on the lead lap with an hour to go and they plug Rick Kelly in, yes.
Just looking at some of the other the other Audis, one that we shouldn't miss either, Jason Bright, Warren Luff, Rod Salmon, Liam Talbot in the Squirk .com AU.
Interactive schooling, that is. Right. Rod Salmon's business.
Yeah. Now, this is very, very interesting. One, because it's got possibly, if not the one of the brightest wraps I've ever seen on a car. It's very, very bright blue. But you can't write off a car that's got Warren Luff and Jason Bright in it.
Correct. And what they've done this year is that those
that's two a 12-spec car as well, I should say.
And Craig Lanza was in that car last year and has been Luffy sort of joined the frame, has been replaced by Jason Bright essentially. But what they've done to reduce the amount of time that Rod Salmon has to spend behind the wheel, they've brought Liam Talbot in as an unseated driver. Now Liam will be completely unknown, I think, around the world, but he raced in the Radical Australia Cup last year in SR3s in the Force on the Cars, won it, and raced that car at a GT round at Queensland Raceway and was very impressive. So he's a great young guy, he's a talent, self-made man, really enjoys his racing. Number one aspiration is to go to Le Mans and race at Le Mans,
preferably
in an Aston Martin.
We like him already.
Yeah, he loves it. So you'll like him, actually. I'll introduce you to Liam, but he's a good little steerer, and he just adds an X factor to that team that I don't think you can rule out. And Brighty's fantastic around here. He's unbelievable. Luffy on the podium again with Craig Lowndes and teamed up with Lowndes in the V8 Enduros last year.
We haven't even talked about the other vehicles in there. We've got great variety in here. There's... we've got the Ferraris, of course, and for no reason than they're first up on the list, but I've got to say probably one of the favourites got to be the Clearwater Racing car. Yeah. Craig Baird with Matt Griffin again, and with Mok Weng Sung and Hiroshi Hamaguchi in the 458. This is a 13 car. This is a top dollar, fully specced, ready to go car, and they know how to race here.
Third 2 years ago, second...
There's a progression here.
Last year, isn't there? Seeing something? And they've strengthened their lineup again by adding Hamaguchi, who's not seeded, but is very, very fast. And that team, with that lineup, sans Matt Griffin, won the Sepang 12-hour in September last year very, very well. Very good victory. Against good teams like Kraft Racing and with the Aston Martins. So, good combination. Gee, they're good. And Beto is unbelievable around here. And Matt Griffin, I cannot say enough about the impact he's made here.
He is Thruxton's fastest Ferrari driver.
He is. Yeah. And do you remember his stint last year when they got absolutely dudded by the safety car early in the race?
Twice.
And he made up 2 minutes and 15 seconds in a green flag run. And then at the end of the day, they were
just
missing
some shortcuts. Oh,
man, he's unbelievably good. And then they lost their splitter at the end, and he was still fast, and they still finished on the podium and almost won the race. So, look, they will have to be contenders for this. Other Ferraris, of course, were back. They were quite achievers last year with Chocci and Rugolo. Maranello Motorsport, biggest signing of the 12-hour, they've got Craig Lowndes.
Yeah.
And for Australia, that's huge. So, Mika Salo back, John Bauer, the two-time Bathurst champion and legend with Peter Edwards. So, look, they're good. They've gone all out this year. Maranello have been cursed a little bit at this place. And we should mention, we need to talk about the fact that that's a hurting team. Their good friend and the late and great friend of all of ours, Alan Simonson.
Yeah.
Obviously, we lost him last year. The pole position trophy named after him. This year, front row of the group will be left vacant for Alan as well. And he was never on pole here and he never won the race, but he made such an impact.
Yeah.
And the fastest guy ever in a GT car. And it's ironic and it's appropriate that this is the first year that they'll probably knock his time off.
Yes.
Because of the
it's open
and
it's an open
slather.
The other Ferrari is the fantastically named Vicious Rumour Racing, which has got Tony Di Felice, Renato Liberto, but also Dean Canto and Tony Albert Dalberto.
Yeah, good strong team.
That's a quiet, again, you talk about quiet achievers. There's a team who many of our international listeners might say, well, I don't really know any of those guys, so who are they?
Correct. And the delight for me about this race this year is that it's so open and there's so many combos that you rule out on a first glance, but then you go back and look at it and go, well, hang on a minute, why shouldn't they be classified as contenders? And that's one of those cars. Renato Liberto is a professional driver coach and shook down that car at Catalunya, actually, when they took delivery of it from Michelotto, and he was awesome, posted a video, and man, he was fast. He's a very, very quick driver. Di Felice is the non-seater driver in that car, but he goes okay. They're going to be a good combination.
We're talking about seeded drivers. You just better explain how that's worked.
So two drivers classified as seeded, it's massively controversial, and I'll dumb it down because that's the only way I can explain it to myself. Two drivers that are classified as pro drivers, gold or silver, I think, in the European classifications, and then
platinum
outside
and gold,
of that, and you're allowed to have obviously non-seeded drivers. So, for example, the Clearwater Cup, Matt Griffin, Craig Baird, they're the two professional drivers. Wang and Hamaguchi not classified as full-time Young Gun Pro drivers?
We've almost mentioned everybody, so I'm going to go through a couple of others that we've missed out. Christopher Mees is a name that is well known to our listeners in the 2012 Spec Network Clothing Hallmark number 9 car, and he has got with a Mark Eddy and Mark Cini. Is that how we say it?
Mark Cini, yes, yeah. For a cup races.
I was going to say they're both Porsche drivers, aren't they? And it's interesting for me to talk to so many Carrera Cup or Porsche racers who are transitioning across to Audis. Normally we say if you can drive a Porsche, you can pretty much drive anything, but it has got a particular driving style. But so many transitioning across to the Audi have said that they feel that's one of the easier cars to make the transition into. It's a very well-balanced car. It's mid-engined rather than rear-engined, but they seem to be able to get their heads around it very, very quickly.
I think they like the 10-position traction control switch.
It could be that. A couple of questions for you then as we wrap up our preview of the Liqui Moly 12 Hours of Bathurst for 2014. Clearly, GT3 is going to be at the front of the field. Are we going to see any of those Class B cars even early on through the race? Are they going to be troubling the guys at the front?
I think so. The Largo car especially, assuming they can get their curse and get past the first hour for the first time, Peter Cox will start that car. This is his third time here and he's yet to complete a lap in the race.
Looked very, very relaxed yesterday. Yeah, I had a quick chat with him. He was talking to Ollie Gavin, actually.
Yeah, he's a great driver. And so guarantee him starting. But yes, they will. Short answer to the question, I have no doubt they'll trouble it. The Rotec guys should. Pat Long, Davo, as we mentioned before, and definitely Largo's car.
More difficult question to answer. Are those guys going for an outright win, or would they be happy just to take the Class B honours?
I think their goal probably... I mean, every racing driver wants to win outright, but when you're in a class, it's a little bit different, isn't it? So they'll be going for class victory and see how high up they can get in the final standings. Maybe get onto the podium outright. Mm. That could be a possibility. We've seen Class B cars finish fourth outright here before Porsches in the last couple of years. So it's doable. Last year, I think the first one home was eighth. Motorsport Services Porsche creeped into the top 10. It's such a deep field, though. It will be tough.
And that is the issue. I mean, we've got something close to, 30 cars there effectively in GT3 categories. Before I ask you for your predictions for overall, which is going to be immensely... name all of the top class. Got to talk about the weather, because it's so often a factor here in any race. And the 12-hour race, of course, you know, we're starting at 6:15 in the morning. It will be...
Almost an hour earlier than last year, too.
Yeah, it will be just about getting light. There was enough light in the sky that the TV cameras will work. It's going to look beautiful on television. And I love the idea of getting up, coming to the racetrack, doing the racetrack, and then still finishing in time to get, you know, a couple of hours down the pub afterwards.
Correct.
That's brilliant.
That's how we work here in Australia, 90.
But it is the forecast for the weekend, and particularly for Sunday, is hot, hot and hot. It was 35 to 37 on Monday when I got here. It was 15 degrees cooler on Tuesday. Wednesday a little bit cooler again, but now it's going to ramp up, and clearly that is going to be a factor, not just for the drivers, but for the cars and the tyres as well, split between Michelin and Pirelli here.
And the track.
We don't know
what this track will do in hot temperatures. The old surface, when it got hot, was slow, really, really slow. And we saw that in qualifying last year when the afternoon session was nowhere. You wouldn't bother going out, just get laps. But I think that will probably stay the same. And that morning qualifying session is going to be the fast one. That will be where the quick times are set. But the first hour of the race will be happy hour. And it always is. The race to the first pit stop, it's a sprint race, and it'll be cooler. Even though we're going for a top of, 35 currently on Sunday, it'll be 18 degrees, probably 19, 20 when we start the race. So,
if that, it was 11 degrees this morning.
Yeah, it was quite cool. So they'll be making a...
Celsius, that is, for our American listeners.
Yes, no, we don't get colder than that in Fahrenheit here. It's going to be fast in the morning. It will be difficult in the day, but we're just going to have to see Michelin and Pirelli, the two tyre brands, they're guessing. They've done as much research as they can, but we don't know what the track's going to do. It's a massive unknown.
Now, last year, the weather gods threw the dice and threw the six for the incident card at the end. And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, if you've not played board games for motor racing, the six came up at the end and we had Noah here on the bottom of the mountain looking for planks of wood.
And the slowest overtaking manoeuvre in the history of Bathurst.
That's not going to happen this year, though, is it? We're not going to have rain.
Well, I tweeted somebody early this week and said, "He said, what's the forecast for Bathurst?" And I said, "Fine, hot with a chance of snow." And that's what this place does, John. It's just bonkers. It could be torrentially wet at the top and bone dry and bright and sunny, and you're in your t-shirt and shorts and thongs down here. It could be anything. I think
I'll never be in a thong. You'll be happy to know.
No, thongs in Australia are footwear.
Oh, okay. Thank God for that.
Flip-flops.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Jandals if you're in New Zealand. Right. Yeah, I probably should have classified that. That's a bad thought.
We need to get off that because we've left the listener with a picture that they don't need. You and I in thongs, no. All right, then. So the big question, where's the winner coming from?
I think one of the four, the two Erebus cars, HTP, or Phoenix.
Right.
Or Clearwater. Or Mariner.
It is a bit like that, though, isn't it?
No, look, I think the combination that HTP have got is brilliant. The combination Phoenix with their success here in the past, remember former winners with the Works Audi team, fourth year last year with drivers that had never been here. I think they're looking so good. You cannot go past Erebus, though. They look unbelievably strong. My five favourites. Can I have five? Is that okay?
I'll come in again. Come on, you can have five favourites.
Two Erebus cars, HTP, Phoenix, Clearwater.
Right, okay. Says Richard Creel, who will be with us at the weekend. All sessions live.
Before we go, can we talk about this that I'm holding?
You've got 1 minute.
I tweeted it. Mm-hmm. And get on Twitter. I believe the responsible adult retweeted it. But you made the back page of the local newspaper, the Great Western Advocate, talking it up for millions. High praise from the man with the microphone. RadioLeMans.com, John Hindoff returns to the mountain this year, and a big picture of your smiling face. It's not a bad photo.
That's
actually
a very good photo, that. He took the unfat filter on, clearly, with the Triumph t-shirt. Creelsey, thank you.
You'll hear
Creelsey's voice every session live here on RadioLeMans.com, in Sound and Vision on RadioLeMans.com on Saturday and Sunday, Oz time as well. Check the front page for details of our coverage of the 2014 Liqui Moly Bathurst 12 Hours.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, go to www.radiolemon.com. Radio Show Limited. We talk to the world.